pioneers of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Till filling in tonight on Sterling every damn night, in for Walter Sterling. It's Mother's Day. Very excited about that. Had the pictures out today. I don't know if you guys did the same thing. Looking at, you look so young. Next to, you pull out your mom picture. You know, get your mom picture out there. I don't know if you have great pictures of your mom. My mom was very camera shy. So unfortunately, we didn't have a huge inventory. But every time I would find a good picture of her today, and I'd want to share it because I got my Aunt Florence. I got my Aunt Florence is actually my godmother. So without too much detail, my mom's baby sister, I was sharing with her earlier today. It was fantastic. Just awesome. So each picture that was fantastic of her, even the ones that were with my dad. I boxed my dad out with the old cropping, right? And I would look at myself and go, oh, my God, whoa. And then, you know, you do like the double, triple take, and you go to the mirror and you say, yeah, let me look closer here. Yeah, all right. It looks like basically the same face, but wow, these old paper photographs. I even have, you remember the size that we used to, there was a square that you used to get when you would go to a photo booth. Oh my God, really? How old are you, Ed Till? Ed Till, by the way, just tuning in, you go, where's Walter? Who's this guy? Well, what photo, but what's going on? Ed Till in for Walter Sterling, Sterling every damn night. Yeah, talking about Mother's Day with the pictures and the way we used to take them. Right. There was the photo booth, which had a seat in it, a round seat that I think you used to spin it to the left to raise the seat. They were trying to get you to line up with the camera in there, the curtain, the whole deal. I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe we'd have to Google it. I'd have to put the Gemini robot. I love that thing on fact checking this. But I believe we would enter the photo booth with quarters, that not even paper money was necessary to get those photos. But they were square, which means they're Instagram post matching. Right. And I had a couple of those. The other kind of picture I found, again, dinosaur stuff, but I think it's back, actually. I think it's a recurring format, is the Polaroids. Remember the Polaroids? You rip out the thing, you shake it, and you had to give it a moment to develop in front of you when they were thick. Got some of those. Again, when I see pictures of my beautiful mom, my handsome dad, everything is good. Then I look over and see me and, you know, the clothes, right? The hairstyle, are only saved by one thing. There's only one thing that can save you when you're looking at a really goofy, trendy outfit or haircut on yourself, is that, thank God, the whole rest of the world was looking just as crazy cockamamie as you were. So you blended in. You didn't really jump out like that. So anyway, that was today. Did a few phone calls. a couple of moms that are up in their years now, friends with my aunt elsewhere. We did the round robin. Even beautiful Martha spoke to Martha up in Connecticut. Martha's the mom of a very, very close friend of mine's wife. And she was enjoying a beautiful afternoon by the lake. And we did our Mother's Day calls. So, I don't know, Mother's Day, I'm sure it could be a big event at your home, right? Lots of people, lots of food, long day, afternoon. So if you're kicking back and you're relaxing, it's Sterling every damn night. I am the fill-in host tonight, Ed Till. You may have heard of me. Some of the stations that we are on tonight, let's see, WGAN, I believe, up in Portland, Maine. And that was KFBK, I believe, in Sacramento. Stations that have carried Ed Till's show over the years, over the decades. It's unbelievable right now. You're hearing the voice of a 50-year broadcaster. First Ed Till on-air radio show, 1975. And look, I cannot believe the calendar myself. To tell you the truth, it doesn't feel like 50, but it's amazing. I've known Walter for decades of those years, so it's a pleasure and honor to be sitting in for him. You know, it's a great show we have for you tonight. All your favorite people. Get my get some of my good plugs in here. Oh, yeah. You know, the rock and roll priest, Father Drucker. Can't wait to talk to this guy. Selena, another one. I can't wait to chat with her. And JB Bakery Steve, all coming up. Dave Scott, we'll chat with later. We are loaded for this beautiful Sunday. We're still in springtime. Yeah, I was asking today on the phone, faraway places, I was asking how their weather was progressing spring-wise. A couple of my pals up north, they've already had a couple of 85-degree days. We, Central Florida, is where my studio is tonight. I'm beaming into you from Central Florida. We've had a couple of days so far, over 90, and we've had some humid high 80s, so we're starting on our warm weather earlier and earlier each year. It's underway right now. All right, guys, super fantastic to be with you. If you're saying, where's Walter? I think he's enjoying a pina colada or something down in the laundry room. And he's got the greatest show prep and a greatest studio. I follow it on Facebook religiously. Okay, so it is me, Ed Till, filling in for Walter Sterling on Sterling every damn night.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you tales of living with our 8 kids in our old house in Delaware.
Just when we got into record today, we were waiting on a phone call from our son, who has just flown all the way across the world.
This is his first trip. This is not an insult, but he typically has never been more than 18 miles away from the home.
He doesn't like to travel. He doesn't like to go places. He's content being where he is.
Until he hit us up with this idea that he's flying to an Asian country.
So as we got here and went to look at the phone to see if he'd landed yet, we got another phone call.
Our adult daughter, who is also living independently, wants to get a puppy. But she's going away for 6 months on a trip. So guess who gets to take care of the puppy?
Okay, that is not the deal. She did not say we get to take care of the puppy. She said, hey, if I got this dog, would you? So it's not like we're automatically assumed to take care of this dog.
But I'm the anti-dog person in the house. And so,
not really because you're anti-dog, but because we've had dogs and we basically got to that point where it's like, okay, well, we've had these dogs. We're not going to do this.
I just
anymore.
Don't want another dog in the house.
Right. You know, that's I understand.
All. So you could say I'm anti-dog in the house, but this is a cute dog.
It's adorable.
And you seem to be going along with her.
I really am not going along with her. I'm just trying to figure out if we can really make the decision that she doesn't get the dog. I mean, we can say we're not going to watch it, but would you really do that? It's pretty cute. I have the perfect solution. We get the dog and we fly it to Thailand. We fly it to Thailand for our son to watch, and we kill two birds with one stone. We know he's great. He's taken care of. He has, you know, a little buddy, and we don't have to watch the dog.
That'd be the perfect solution.
Either that, or we fly you to Thailand, and I keep the puppy. All this to say, they grow up. You think that they don't need a thing from you, but you're more worried about them now than you were when they were toddlers. When they were toddlers, you could tell them no. Now we can't really say don't go to Thailand by yourself, having never been on a plane. We want to be proud of that and encourage it. And we really can't say you can't get the dog.
And the overseas trip, now I'm being charged a monthly fee for the cell phone texting. I just got that message.
Okay, he pays his cell phone bill. He got the little pluggy anything that's supposed to take care of it. It's just an extra data charge. He already said that, and it's not as if he doesn't pay the bill.
All right.
Are we getting the puppy?
No comment.
See you in Thailand.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
News, day and night around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
You got it, Ed Tills.
Ed Till.
Sterling. Every damn night. Pleasure to be with you on this Mother's Day. Mother's Day's wrapping up, Ed. You know, you look out the high-rise window, bumper to bumper, and every major city, toll roads, bridges. But you did the right thing. You stayed late. They said, no, we got to go early. Want to beat the traffic. They said, we just put coffee on. We just, I sent the kids out for crullers and a cheese horn and a bun and a thing. All right, we'll stay. And then when you're staying late on a holiday and you're watching the clock, you see what's going on. You say to yourself, well, now we might as well just stay really late and let it be done. And then you're going home like 11:15, right, quarter to midnight, and you got work tomorrow. So anyway, we're with you, hanging out with you, Sterling, every damn night. Walter Sterling with the night off. Ed Till filling in with you. Can I say hi to you on the other side? Are we talking to Matthias on the I studied up on that movie, and I think we have a film review tonight on, is it Juliet and Romeo, I believe.
Let me check.
Can I reach you? Because I understood that they were going to come from that side. And just, all right, you know what? We'll send me a signal or something. But I have this movie. It does blow my mind a little bit. I mean, Romeo and Juliet is a classic Shakespeare thing. This movie. That I think is going to be reviewed tonight. It just opened on Friday, by the way. They snuck it in on me. I didn't catch a trailer, nothing. But here's the thing, right? It catches me off guard. Romeo and Juliet has been done a lot in our lifetime. Of course, Bill wrote it in the didn't he write in the 1600s, Shakespeare? I don't want to get caught being off on my facts about Shakespeare, but no, I think it goes way back and obviously very popular, right? The young love, we all remember what we would do, how upset we were, you know, be together, break up. It's the Montagues and the I forget the other guys. I know Montagues is one of them. You know, I can't get over this. I got any disco people listening right now? Back in the day, we were at the club. Okay, so let's go back to 1977, 1978. There was a long playing Romeo and Juliet disco suite of songs. It was a whole side of vinyl, and it was like one of those rock operas where they keep coming back. Oh, Romeo. And it was huge. And wasn't there, man, I want to say Claire Danes. Did Claire Danes do Romeo and Juliet? Not DiCaprio. Did DiCaprio? It just seems like the thing gets done a lot. Now, what's exciting, I'm sure, for film people, right? Because I found out about this off of a great film reviewer. The thing that's interesting, and I read somebody alluding to this without actually saying it, that there's a big plot twist at the end. Also, that the battle scenes, do you remember battle scenes in, it was never one of my favorites. Come on. It's a little more like a Shakespeare's Hallmark movie, right? A little bit. But nonetheless, a plot twist and realistic battle. So it looks like it's going to do. We'll see. We'll have to see how it goes. I'm very curious if you can sell Romeo and Juliet again. And how many times can you sell it? How many a plot twist? Maybe nobody dies. So, no, that would take the whole. I think the ending is critical. Yeah. All right. I'll have to see it now because it really provoked my interest that it snuck out seemingly not that long after I've seen one of the various Romeo and Juliets. Right. I know there's another one. It comes up on my are you a TCM? Boy, disco and TCM, Edward. This is you're going to need proof to drive pretty soon. You're too old. The eras seem to be compressing now. I feel like things are coming around faster. I think there is one. I think because I'm a TCM once a week. I check out everything TCM is going to be airing for the next 3 weeks. I just sit there patiently with the remote and keep pushing out further and further. And then I mark all the movies I want to record that one. And I like to stockpile them. So I know in my 500 or 600 of these films that I snagged off my it's not a recorder anymore. What do they call it? Video memory? What on demand? Whenever I don't download them. I know that. I don't. They're not on my side of the computer chip, right? I'm letting the other guy hold all of these movies, and I just hit play. And I love how you can rewind them, right? I mean, the idea of rewinding at will, even on your live programming with my crazy service, you can just whatever you want. You know, 2 weeks ago, and the same thing zap backwards. It's crazy how much memory it has. But I think I have could it be? Boy, I might have a silent film version of Romeo and Juliet saved. I don't know why I'm seeing the movie poster image that they put up there, and you save your movies, and you got all these little boxes, and I love it. I love all that. So I don't know. I guess this is sometimes disappointing to me. I don't know how it strikes you. Sometimes disappointing that many things are seen as easy to reproduce and make money off of a music style or in this case, you know, how many times are you going to go through the same story with the same characters? All right, you got a plot twist, but still, you know, you're telling me up front that it's the same too that I've seen in the other films. And you read the play in high school. I was able to skip it. I was able to dodge Romeo and Juliet. I was big on The Merchant of Venice. Oh, God, I think we spent a whole friggin' semester on The Merchant of Venice. The Merchant of Venice was a long transaction with that merchant. Yeah, it just went on and on. All right. I think we're getting ready to take a pause until Sterling every damn night with you on all of these great radio stations across America, especially the flagship WPHT in Philadelphia. Love you guys. Ed Till in for Walter Sterling.
Talking jazz, bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a story from my days when I was working in the NYPD's auto crime division. It was the late 90s, and we had a confidential informant who we used to call the weatherman because he could predict the weather. And he would give us tips that would often turn into big-time arrests. So one afternoon, he told us that there was a guy on 168th Street in Amsterdam Avenue that he knew had a Dodge Caravan where the vehicle identification number was changed. That meant the vehicle was stolen. One afternoon, my partner and I spotted the vehicle. We pulled it over, checked out the VIN number, and sure enough, the car was bad. We placed the guy under arrest and took him into the 3-0 precinct for processing. So we had the stolen van in the back lot of the precinct, and I noticed across the street from the precinct there was a lot of guys from 168th Street now that appeared across the street from the precinct. And I'm like, what the hell are these guys doing here? And they're watching me like a hawk. So I go back inside and I tell my partner, he spots it. And what he does is he gets on the phone and he calls up his informant and says, hey, we grabbed that guy with the stolen Dodge Caravan, but now half the block where he hangs out is across the street from the precinct. So the informant said, I'll tell you what, give me about an hour. I'll find out what's going on. He calls us back and he says, listen, he says, they're going to try to steal that car out of the precinct parking lot. And we says, why? It's a stolen car. And he says, there's a secret hidden compartment in that car. And there's drugs and a gun in there. He goes, I don't know where it is exactly in the car, and I don't want to ask too many questions. He said, but don't leave that car alone for a second. They're going to try to steal the car out of there. So what we did was we took the battery out of the car, chased the guys from across the street, and my partner and I started really digging into where this secret compartment could be. We looked under the hood. We looked under the car. Then we started tearing the interior apart. Sure enough, in the back seat of the car where you would rest your arm, there was a panel. And with a little pulling and finagling, we were able to pop it off where we found a couple of ounces of cocaine and a loaded handgun. So when we came up with the drugs and the guns, we brought it back into the station house and we showed the owner of the car. And of course, he pretended like he didn't. Where'd this come from? I had no idea. That must have been in there when I purchased the car, which fell on deaf ears because we knew it was his. So we charged him with the stolen vehicle, the loaded firearm, and a couple of ounces of crack cocaine. Unfortunately for the guys across the street, they never had the opportunity to come over and steal the car back from us. And the informant who was working off jail time, he was pleased because we put in a good word with the district attorney's office for his case. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division.
Ed Pill, he's no shill for Sterling every damn night.
Ed Pill. Filling in for Walter Sterling tonight on Sterling every damn night, and this is Mother's Day night. It's weird, right? You're hanging out, doing all this stuff early in the day. I don't know if I'm talking to a big Catholic population, but I know church was all abuzz today. At Mother's Day, you got a new pope, a lot of activity. This portion, this final hour of the day that we're getting ready to enter, a little bit exhale time, huh? For you? Certainly for me. I tell you, it's a wonderful to be nostalgic and have great memories. But at the end of the, it can be a long day with all of that. So hang out. We're going to have some fun. We got some great stuff going on. Talking in the last segment about this new movie, which I don't think we're going to hear the review tonight, but one way or the other, I'm checking out this film. It's called Juliet and Romeo. Right, I reversed it, and it's got a little surprise in it that I don't even know, but I heard there was a plot twist. But that got me to thinking today, and this also is, I guess, intertwined with Mother's Day to some degree. Teenagers now, my heart goes out to them. It does. I mean, they get to be in their 20s. They could be a little snippy. But when we were teenagers, the world did not bother our teenagehood, right? We were able to be teenagers without the world coming in on us. Now, it is a fine line in demographics, because if you're a little older than me, teenage years could have meant that you were worried about getting drafted for Vietnam. Certainly you get to be 10 years older than me. Wow, how the world came in on your youth. But I'm mid to late 50s birthday. So when I turned 17, I talked to my friends about this all the time. We were in high school together. When we turned 17, that was the first full, maybe second full year that there was no draft. Because when we were 15, we weren't eligible yet, but it was still a television show once a year where they would pull the birthdays by lottery. And you'd sit there, even though you weren't up against it, you had a few years to go. You'd sit there and really hold your breath when a date would pop early that was near your birthday. But that was the end of it. Honestly, once the draft was eliminated and Vietnam did start to wind down, we were free to be teenagers, like straight up teenagers. Right? It wasn't like you're a teenager, but there's a pandemic and you're a teenager in the pandemic where how are you going to meet girls? What are you going to do when you meet them? How whomever you're looking for, you know, whatever kind of pairing makes you feel complete, difficult to do. The other thing they talked about, this would have sucked for me. I enjoyed high school. I had a good time in high school. I did a lot of stuff. There were activities. I made great friends. I got friends today that I met literally the first couple of days of freshman year, and we've stayed friends. I have elementary school friends, too, very close. So we as a group had an awesome teen era in our lives, long before you drive, right? I mean, you're a teenager at 13. And I remember there were movies, I think the price changed. It wasn't about seeing R-rated films or whatever, but there was a price change that happened at 13. And you were proud, right, that you were going to pay more money because, you know, it meant you were like a fuller citizen in the life that you were trying to figure out as a teenager. So I love this subject because I think now we got them all jammed up. We got them all worried about everything. And I would love to see a time where they could just be teens again like we were. We had a fantastic era.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Yeah, Ed Till filling in on Sterling every damn night for Walter Sterling. Pleasure to be with you. You know, I was talking about our teenage years and Mother's Day, family, back in the day, all of that. And earlier, I don't know, gosh, I think it was before the big meal, I came across a Beatles album from my childhood, okay, Help, the movie Help, the soundtrack album, and blew my mind. I made a note to talk about this. Why? Because I think I was 9 or something when Help came out. That was the second Beatle movie. First it was Ed Sullivan Show. Then it was the black and white movie, A Hard Day's Night, where you saw them playing on the big screen. Go crazy as kids. I remember the first movie, my dad had a chaperone, I guess is the word, right? A chaperone, Michael Cizak, a couple of my friends, we wanted to be the Beatles already at that age, right? We were like, how do we do this? And we weren't even old enough to go 5 blocks out of the neighborhood to get to the movie theater. But when we came out of the movie, my dad was waiting for us, and he had to cross the big streets with us, all this. And we were already play acting that we were the Beatles. Okay, this is in our mind. We come out of the theater and the crowd of people exiting the theater, we just used our imagination. That was the crowd that was going to chase us. We were little tiny Beatles, you know, 8-year-old kids, and the whole thing, ooh, they're going to see that we're the Beatles. We have to run the way the Beatles did in the in our neighborhood, the way they did in the film, right? They were just bounding down the street, and the whole screen was full of girls and some dudes screaming fans. And this was to us very exciting. You see a movie, you get outside, and you play act the movie. We didn't let my dad in on it at all, and of course we ran like crazy kids away from him and went home. And he was supposed to make sure that we were safe. So when he got home and I'm, you know, just Ringo Starr in front of the mirror, I'm on my parents' couch in front of our big mirror, and I got the clothes hangers, and I'm playing drums imaginarily, and you know, he comes in and there was a little disciplinary action that had to be levied on, because what I found out was I was not a Beatle. My dad made it perfectly clear with the daggers, and he was furious. Because, you know, the truth is he probably didn't want to go over there and walk us. My mom would be the one who didn't want us to get killed and would insist that he go over. And it was reasonably apparent that we didn't feel like we needed him to get home. And you know, of course, Cizak's house was different than mine. When I was a teenager, or this is, the Beatle thing is when we're real small. But when you get to be a teenager, in my house, there's no escaping anything because you're the only kid. Right. All my friends had siblings, man. They were getting away with murder because if you're a sib older than you starts a problem in the house, all the focus goes on, and you've got free reign, right? So I couldn't escape with anything. And my, you know, all of my curfews, all of my times, everything was, did Edward call? You know, and if I didn't call on time, woof, I would hear about that when I got home. So there was my teenage years were heavily supervised in the house. Now, of course, I grew up in the city, the big city. So, when you get to, I said before, 13 is a big deal, right? You start, but when you're old enough now to figure out how that subway works. Now, the buses are not attractive when you're a kid. A bus doesn't do anything for you. A bus is rolling real slow and whatever. Your mother uses it to maybe go to a department store. Nothing exciting about the bus to train, on the other hand. Wow. I mean, there's a train in New York City called the A Train, famous song. Da 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 da. Well, that subway runs, I believe, I just saw it the other day, I believe it runs 41 miles from one end of the way north and then all the way down and southeast over to Brooklyn. So when you figure how that thing works, where it would take you, where you could go, the whole world opens up. And that was us as teenagers. We couldn't get enough getting on that subway, going into the city, and whatever. We didn't know what we were going to do. Well, who cares? We're going to walk around. We're going to look at people, going to see things. You go to the big city, you go to downtown, and you're talking about Times Square, maybe, or you're going to you know, in the old days, the World Trade Center, now it's Freedom Tower. That's what we would do, just throw ourselves into the city because it was magical, man, that we could get in with that. It was a token back when you were a kid. It wasn't even a Metro card, an old it was just a little token. You shove that boy in there, and as long as you don't come out of the system, you keep switching trains. You go anywhere. Oh, it's fantastic. So, again, today, if you're a teenager, I don't know how you're going to arm yourself and, how you protect yourself from getting killed on public transportation. But we never even thought about it being dangerous for us at all. All right, Ed Till, Sterling every damn night. I'm in tonight for Walter Sterling, and we will continue.
When you think of a gentleman's club, what is the innovation? A beautiful girl gets up, she takes off her clothes, dancing to some hit. Perhaps she drives me crazy, or perhaps it's by she pours some sugar on me, or living La Vida Loca. But it's more than that. It really is. And the premier strip club of Belgrade, Serbia, is a place called Dark Angels. And they have three things that they want to relate to dancers in the strip clubs to make them even more successful. Number one, emphasis on experimental entertainment. One of the prominent trends in adult entertainment is the emphasis on experimental entertainment. Customers are no longer satisfied with passive experiences. They seek immersive, boy do I, and interactive engagements. This trend has led to the rise of themed events, and gentlemen's clubs need to grab onto this one. Number two, integration of technology. Technology plays a pivotal role in shaping the future of adult entertainment. From virtual reality experiences to interactive platforms, technology is being leveraged to enhance customers' experiences in the champagne room. It also includes an expansion of accessibility for all. And number three, focus on diversity and inclusivity. And I couldn't agree more. There's a growing emphasis on diversity and inclusivity in the adult entertainment industry. Customers are seeking representation and variety, leading to an emergence of diverse performers and content that caters to a wide range of preferences and interests. Thus, exotic dancers who keep their feet covered until the end. Yep. If you have a foot fetish, you're being seen by many of the great gentlemen's clubs. Ask your local. Maybe you can find that place that'll cater to you. From the Champagne Room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Ed Till, he's no shill for Sterling every damn night.
Yeah, I'm totally shill-less. Ed Till, not a shill. Love the jingle. I'm going after something near and dear to my mom's heart when I was a kid. She was big on this. I picked up on it very, very young. I might have been, it couldn't be kindergarten. You're not going by yourself. I think kindergarten they would take them. My first, second grade. Okay. Picture the winter. I know it's not much different. Philadelphia winter, a St. Louis winter. Give me some snow out there. A lot of snow, and you got to go to school, and they've moved it or whatever they've done to it. They've plowed it. They've done something so that now you have to go. And before you leave, and again, the olden days, your mom would wrap you up like a marshmallow in your ski jacket and your hood and your scarf and your gloves, and the gloves, you don't lose them. And remember that whole thing, please. I lost every pair. I lose my gloves now. So yeah, you're all like that, and still you're wincing because you don't want to go out there. You don't understand. When I was a kid, I was very upset that New York was settled in the cold weather. As I grew, I understood, oh, a big city, important city. Well, so why'd they put it here? Why wouldn't they put it in Miami? Why wouldn't they put it where there would never be anything dangerous or harmful? Or it was crazy to me, this snow thing. So you're bundled up, wrapped up, ski jacket and the muffler, the scarf. Yeah, the scarf is on the outside of your hood. It's just sad what's going on when you're a kid, but they're going to shove you out there. And here comes the big moment. My mom would leave her coffee cup as she turned away, and I would scarf a little a sip of coffee, and she would say, oh, I don't think you should have that. I go, Mom, it's so warm. I got to go out there. All right. So she let it slide, and by third or fourth grade, I'm looking for a cup of coffee every morning, like with the grown-ups. I love coffee and, you know, sugar and milk. I'm trying to minimize them. I want that coffee to bite a little bit. I like it a little bit on the – not bitter, but I want a little bite on, and I'm way into coffee. So as we go forward, you get high school. When I go to high school, we had to take a special bus because the high school was so far away. It was a long ride, but where the bus picked you up was at the Chock Full of Nuts coffee shop at the big intersection. So everybody was drinking coffee all the time, Chock Full of Nuts. I mean, again, staggering when you mention these facts that pertain to the, yeah, cup of coffee's 25 cents. It's crazy. And you got the plastic lid. You're drinking it in the cold before you get on the bus. All right. So all my life, no matter where I've lived, and I've lived a lot, New York, L.A., Chicago, Detroit, New Orleans, I've lived everywhere, every city, when I was young, I would get an apartment, get everything under control, and then within 2 weeks of me being in the new place, my mom would come for the visit, supervise, see what's going on, what do you got, what do you need, and she would inspect the coffee. Which what coffee are you buying? Where are you making it? Of course, Mr. Coffee was kind of new. There were, wow, Mr. Coffee was like an iPhone or something. Mr. Coffee came along, and there was a big argument about coffee. Mr. Coffee did not come in about, oh, welcome, Mr. Coffee. Mr. Coffee shows up, and they go, who are you? You're not what? What did Mr. Coffee completely blow out of the water? Decimated what? The percolator. The percolator, which I love. I've talked about the percolator my entire, I love a percolated coffee. You have a percolator at home? Anybody listening to me has a percolator at home? You know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, forcing steam and all that stuff, you could do it all day long. You got your Keurig. I will not. I've never enjoyed one pod ever. They've never had a pod strong enough or whatever. And I have tried pods, man. You know, they took over all the radio stations when I was in Delaware. Pod. Everything was pods. Okay. I'm fine with if the coffee's good, but the coffee it's never been the way the potency and the heat, the potency, and then that caffeine. For me, can't do it on Kirk. So so my mom twice got me a percolator, and I couldn't lie that each time I started to get a little too Mr. Coffee, she'd percolate me right back. I don't know if you love percolated coffee. It's very difficult to do what I'm about to mention. And I even wince when I say this. Speaking of wincing, here's a real wincer. Cold press coffee. I mean, it's not even, I don't know what you're trying to do unless, you don't want to pay for the hot water. I don't understand. Why? What would be the, how could you lose the heat out of the, what's the word? Is it invigorating? Yeah, the invigorating that the hot caffeine, all cold? Cold. Why? Let's sit there. Then you got to look at it. And the kid that was making it, was one of these creatives. You know, he's on the computer all the time. If he's listening, you know, we're on Delaware 105.9 tonight. He could be listening. He knows I love him. I love visiting. But wow, when he first brought up the cold coffee, I mean, a part of my ventricle, my aorta, broke for the kid, because I said, wow, you know, they've lowered their expectations so far. I mean, you know, it's, you're a teenager in a crazy world. It's been for the last 30 years. Ah, that doesn't work. Or, I don't know if that will, is that poisonous? Is that bad for the environment? You know, there's all kinds of concerns and worries. Why don't we just put, you know, I am not laughing in a condescending way. You say, oh boy, look at this jerk on the radio. He's talking. I am not talking down. I am totally amused by the idea that you could get away with this and still call it coffee. Do not need just, you need water and a thing that you put it in, and then you go away. You go back to your desk for a while. You come back. I don't know. I'm, you know, a steaming hot cup of Joe, right? I don't even know how coffee got hooked up with the name Joe. I don't even know. I don't even care, because coffee was a beautiful, warm, sensational place to be. And somebody turned the air conditioner on all the way down and are freezing with cold press coffee. Until for Walter Sterling, Sterling every damn night.
Walter M. Sterling.
Yeah, oh man, are we having a blast here or what? Sunday night, Sterling, every damn night. I'm Ed Till, sitting in for Walter Sterling, enjoying, I hope he's having a relaxing evening doing something fun, because we got the fort held down here having a blast. So, you know, there's something in broadcasting. You don't hear it mentioned much anymore. We're moving the streaming world. I don't hear the same phrase, but was great, and it aired during the commercial break. I don't know if every station heard it, so I'll recap a little. It's called the World Wildlife Fund. You've heard of them. They've been around for the longest time, always doing nice stuff, caring about animals and climate. Yeah, just being nice, you know, not having any arguments, or just looking out, being... We were taught, again, it's old terminology, but we were taught to be good conservationists when we were kids. That's that you were conserving all the great stuff. So anyway, I'm listening to this, and I didn't know it was them until the end, but they were talking about the phrase, they were using the phrase, love it or lose it. And I said, you know, I want to talk about my idea. I've been peddling this idea, for a good 10 years. And I try it every time I'm around new people to see, because what the reaction is to this, because it does come off a little radical, a little crazy, a little outside the box. But that's good. That's what gets the juices flowing to come up with a real solution. So here's the way it goes. If you're a young listener, if you're a Generation Z, can I just tell you, I love you. I love the whole crowd that you're in. I feel for you, because I know you're trying to make sense out of what all these other generations did ahead of you. But I know you care when you hear the news story about the plastic on the bottom of the planet and in the ocean. And everybody is such a slob, and everybody throws everything away. And where does it go? All to this place on the bottom of the earth under the ocean. And you go, well, I you know, old people, not you kids, but some old people, oh, I guess it's far away. You know, nature takes care of nature, nothing. That thing is polluting. It's disgusting down there. And the wildlife, love it or lose it vibe came to me. This might be the right moment, because what are we doing now? We're doing all these tariffs. We're changing and reorganizing all the pieces on the chessboard economically. Then maybe this is the right time for my nut job idea, which goes like this. If you sell plastic of any kind, and I want to do it like Trump, right? I'm not going to let anybody know I'm about to have a news conference. I'm going to walk right out and just say, in 60 days, anybody who makes plastic will have to take it back. You figure it out how you're going to get it back. You figure it out how you're going to extract it. Figure it out. But you, who made it, who are enjoying, as you should, the profits and the wealth of your company, you're going to have to add that because the plastic is, you know, it hangs around, it doesn't degrade, all terrible things that we know, and you get, are you like me when you go to the beach? I'm a beach guy. I love being a beach bum. I'll just walk the beach for a couple, 3 hours for no reason at all. And people are slobs on the beach too. They leave and what eventually it goes into the sea oats. That's terrible. Or the I don't know if you're familiar, but it happens all the time, every season, the little turtles are trying to, you know, make love, have children, you know, have more turtles. And they have problems with, they do. You know, it's not easy being a turtle to begin with. It's no picnic. They have problems with procreation because of what people do to the beach. They're trying to snuggle into a little part of the sand and get an egg out there, you know, and I don't know all the tech. I'm not going to pretend that I know exactly how turtles reproduce, but it's a big thing about nesting. Leave them alone. Stay out of their way. Don't put light on the, that was the big thing. They put a law maybe 15 years ago, no more lights on the beach at night because it freaks them out when they're trying to get their eggs hatched and a little why do we have to be involved? We should make room for them. So this kind of thing often is chided by people, right? They will attack all of it as, you know, it's unnecessary and, you know, bleed. No, we are consuming tons on this, which is a great planet. I'm not against consumption. I am not against wealth at all. Wealth and consumption is fantastic. But ask a little Gen Z kid and they will say, of course, we shouldn't create dirt and filth as a result of having, you know, an ordinary product in society. Everybody wants it all the time. You know, the water bottles kill you. You hate the, I mean, I don't know. At the end of a day, you ever look at your trash bucket? Even if you're crushing it, you crushing them? You got to crush them now, right? You got to make them small when you put, even still, you know, individual, you know, a bottle of water, which is probably not a dollar anymore, but, I buy a pallet of water. Right. I haven't got it and bought an individual bottle of water, I think, since the millennium. But no, the idea being, you realize how many of these things you're grabbing onto. So I don't, is it wrong? I mean, you find a flaw in the theory that you got a manufacturing plant. You certainly know how to make the stuff. You're making bottles for beverages, drinks, you know, by the bazillion. How could it be that you would just make something that everybody knows you're going to throw away, and then nobody says anything? Oh, what's going to happen? All these balls. Oh, I got to go. I got a meeting. I got the kid's birthday party. I got a softball. I can't talk about that now. Well, I also loved about that little public service announcement for the WWE. I like the voice. I like when they use a very dramatic kind of female, you know, and she's, you know, kind of speaking from Mother Earth a little bit. I don't know. You know, like, I want to be nice about it. I don't want to be dictatorial at all. But how is it possible that all this stuff can be made and just thrown, like, I don't know, you know, that's where did it go? Did you take out the garbage? Where do you think that goes? So if you make the plastic, what would be, you know, they're going to hate the cost, right? But we used to do fine with glass bottles. I don't know how that's working anymore, cans, but we used to collect bottles when we were kids. And, you know, I think, what was it, 6 cents a bottle? But the idea was, they found a way to keep those bottles moving to the glass recycling plant. All in favor. All right. Look at this clock. Look how much fun we're having. Oh, my God. It's Sterling every damn night. I am Ed Till, and I'm filling in tonight for Walter.
Ed Till, he's no shill for Sterling every damn night.
Yeah. I was told there were going to be jingles. Love the jingles. I am no shill. I am Ed Till. Ed Till is here tonight. That would be me filling in for Walter Sterling every damn night. By the way, I've said it other times when I filled in, how much I enjoy the show. And Walter and I were talking about this the other day. You know, he's a phenomenal creative force in American broadcasting going back decades, since I've known him and even before. Legend. But the key to what this program that I'm filling in on tonight, the key to the success of this and all of the great radio shows that we've enjoyed, being a radio guy makes you enjoy it even more. We've talked about this with the little radio with the earphone and all. So, I just wanted to say that not only am I having fun tonight, but I'm on a show that I enjoy hanging out with. That's when I think the best radio shows are. These are people, not a show, hanging out with you. So Mother's Day, we were talking earlier. My buddies and I were chatting earlier today, stuff that we went through with our parents, good laughs that we've had too. So I'll give you the short version of this. Maybe this is similar to something that you've experienced as a kid. But again, I'm an only child. Very weird in the area I'm about to go into when you're the only kid. Again, you got four or five kids running around the house, even three or four. There's so much activity, you don't get the full scrutiny of the authorities. But here's what happened on a Saturday afternoon. I'm in high school. And my beautiful girlfriend at the time, Dorothy, and I used to go for these walks in the big park. So we would find a tree and maybe make out, you know, have a little, you know, mouth kissing in the daytime. Ooh. And, you know, then we both had stuff to do. Aaron's got to get back home. So, 2:45 Saturday afternoon. And, I get to the apartment door. My apartment, and stick my key in there, right? Open, and the chain lock on a Saturday afternoon. It's the chain lock. We use the chain lock when we go to sleep at night. And the chain lock's not really going to stop a determined bad guy. I'm not even quite sure why we were, bothering to put this little, small, brash chain extra on the door. But, of course, we did. Okay. And my mom used to always say, put the chain on before you. Okay, I'll put the chain on. Yeah, so you could crack the door a little bit. Who's out there? All right, you got the idea. I am ready to come bounding into the house. Maybe you're even picking up from the radio show. I move fast. I'm always determined to get somewhere, do something very purposeful when I move. And certainly when I was young, I had no expectation of my parents putting the chain lock on. So I open it and I lean into the door and am bounced off like I'm a burglar who'd stolen the key. What's going on? Well, when you got the door open, what is that? Maybe a cracked door is 4 or 5 inches. In my location, standing outside the apartment, looking in, I was perfectly aligned with the couch. So I'm looking straight in, and then from the couch, all of a sudden, my mom's head pops up. I'm like, oh, taking a nap in there or whatever. The very next second, my dad's head pops up, and I still smell of the Charlie perfume of my girlfriend. In other words, my teenage world of romance and, you know, you got a girlfriend. All of a sudden, it dawns on me. This is, you know, God smacking me in the face here. Your parents are fooling around in the daytime because they thought you wouldn't. What? What are you even telling me? First of all, I'm an only child. How often do these two even do it? If they were doing it all the time, daytime, bouncing off of furniture, wouldn't there be more kids? Wouldn't there be? There would be. I had the feeling, way wrong, but I had the feeling that, you know, there were always people when you were a kid they look like they're a little, I don't know, above what's happening at the moment. They're always thinking about something. They're, you know, teachers, professors, people like this are always, they're kind of brainiac a little bit. There was something going on up there, always thinking about larger things than, you know, a quart of milk or opening a door. So, my complete wrong impression of my parents was that, you know, sex was, a small part of their, complex, interesting lives. They do, my dad was in all these organizations. My mom was doing stuff. I had no idea. And then I'm now facing my mom's face. She's, not embarrassed, but she's shocked that I'm at the door and we're having eye contact from a room and a half away. Now, thank God, there would not be enough therapy on planet Earth. You could have a psychological convention if, God forbid, they were in any form of undress. That would have been it, man. You call Dr. Freud's great-grandson and say it has to come over right away, whether you're trained in this or not. Wow. So, I just remember saying, like, I was stammering, like I even am now with the subject, I said, okay, I'll be back later. I didn't want to say it in a way that they would think I had any idea, right? I'm trying to not let them know, but they know it's 2:45 in the afternoon. I almost broke the chain off the door. I thought I was going to, I was on my way to the bathroom, to be honest with you. I was holding it till I got, I thought I was going to make a beeline. And I was outside of the periphery of the activities. But how do you not love that about your parents all these years later? How adorable. I mean, they were, look, he's out of here. He's out somewhere. Put the lock on the door. Wow. Probably some Mario Lanza playing, some Tony Bennett, some Al Martino. Just have Al Martino records. Oh, happy Mother's Day, Tina. I've been posting pictures of her today, and now I went ahead and told your story about you fooling around with Dad in the daytime. And me going, what? Okay, Ed Till, Sterling Every Damn Night is the name of the show, filling in for Walter.
Sterling on Sunday. Lost in space. Mission control. Dave Scott. Scott.
Dave Scott coming up at the UFO. This is, I think, my whole life, one of the great subjects to talk about. Dave, it's a pleasure always to be with you. How are you?
I am great. How are you doing, buddy? It's been a while.
It has been a while, and I've been looking forward to this because I'm all excited. I have UFO memories. Not because stuff didn't happen, but I was a little kid listening on the street corner at the candy store to people give these really gripping stories about what they saw. And one of my friends believes that a flying saucer tracked his car until he got home. So I look forward to this segment with you.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't be remiss to say I have heard that story before of people who have had their vehicles followed by UFOs. In fact, 30-some years ago, in my little town here, there was a major alien abduction where this UFO followed this car full of kids heading to Vancouver for about 2 hours before pulling them out off the highway and the aliens coming out and abducting one of the people in the car for 3 hours. So it's not surprising when you say that.
There you go. Now, this is fascinating. Right there, the abduction is a huge overt act while they keep themselves so off the radar, bad pun, but so difficult to track. To me, that's bookending, right? Two extremes. Either you can't find me or I snatch somebody and you still can't find. What are we thinking about the abductor, the UFO, alien? What are we thinking in terms of human, you know, malice and do good? And or is it just a whole different matrix of how they think?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of different abductions that seem to happen to people. I mean, you have the people who get taken and they seem to get downloaded with all sorts of memories and futuristic type of scenarios that are going to happen. There are people who get abducted to be healed. There are other people who get abducted and have either their, if you're female, your reproductive eggs taken, or if you're male, your sperm taken in regards to a hybridization program. Mm. There are people who get taken and never to be seen again. Maybe it's because they just didn't want to be here anymore, or they were taken as some sort of alien food. And then the weird one of it all is what we call MILABS. Military abductions. Mm. This is where people claim that the United States military has this weird program where they actually will take people, scare them into believing that they have been taken by aliens, and literally scare the daylights out of them until they stop going into digging into the UFO and alien story. I know a number of people who claim to be a part of this MILAB investigation, and I tell you, that one scares me more.
That reminds me of that movie with Burt Lancaster. Remember, he was going to take over the country, and they kidnapped Edmund O'Brien, and they held him at that nuclear base that was a secret. Right, that the government would do these kind of things. But here's a question that's always troubled me. Is the military way ahead of meeting up with these forces and facing off with them? Or, like, what would our military be doing with a conduit to aliens and having these abductions? What would the military's angle be there?
Well, I think there's a couple things. There's a couple points of what you just said. Recently, Dr. Eric Davis came out and said the United States government is actually in contact with four different types of species of aliens, one being reptilian. These things look very alligator-like, lizard-like. If you remember the television show V, another one is the alien grays, where that's with the giant gray head, the big black bulbous eyes, and they are more of a scientific side. They stand between like 3.5-4 feet tall up to about 6 feet tall. They are very rubbery, which people claim that if they're very rubbery and meek, but they have powers to shut you down just by touch. There is the humanoids, which are, you know, imagine a bunch of beautiful Swedish people, you know, how they all seem to have blonde hair and blue eyes.
My favorite on Law and Order is the Swedish assistant to the prosecutor. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. and they are a humanoid type species that is allegedly there to bring peace, love, and light to what humanity is. And then the fourth being would be what we call the insectoids. Now, these are a bunch of different species that have like human-like bodies. Right. However, their heads and their arms, one is like the ant people. So imagine an ant with a human with an ant head and ant
head
arms.
On a human being, yeah. I've dated a couple of girls, you know.
The other one would be a mantid beak. So if you took a praying mantis and put a version of that head on a human body, that's kind of what we're looking at. And apparently, according to Dr. Eric Davis, who is a longtime government scientist, that these are the species that are involved. That he's actually testified in that recently in front of members of Congress.
Wow. So, the insectoids. I mean, the insectoids.
Just, yeah.
I'm just digesting that.
It's scary.
Let me ask, would they already be doing something like I'm about to ask? Because, all right, so I'm only child, no siblings, unmarried. I could volunteer. Do you think they would have a way to put me with aliens on the military side, volunteer for my country, or we're not there? Or is it possible there are people volunteering to go face-to-face with the aliens?
I'm sure there are already military members whose job is that secret to do something like that. But if I were you, I would never volunteer to do
that right?
Because
yeah,
the minute the aliens find out you want a piece of them, that's where it's going to get nasty. Okay.
Well, what if I went in liking them? Say, look, I would like to find a way to get along with you. Don't eat me yet. Don't eat me for an hour. Talk to me a little bit and see if we can. You know what I mean? Like, or is it going to be automatic adversaries because species are just going to go at each other? Right.
Well, you know what? We kind of put it in the realm of this. Be careful what you wish for.
Right.
So, for instance, if you're somebody out there who says, look, I want to see if this alien crap is real and I'm just going to put it out there. Hey, guys, come take me.
Yeah.
Do you remember the days of the old Cabbage Patch Kid at Kmart when they had a blue light special during the day and the people would go nuts at like Black Friday and start beating the tar out of everybody?
Yeah.
You don't want that. You don't want that. What you want is you want to be able to put it out there that you want the good guys to come and check you out.
I would.
You don't
I'd
want
be patient
the bad
with
ones.
Them. I would try to be patient with them and not aggress and see if there were. Well, you know what? Why do I envy you? Why is it at this moment I would like to swap out what I do every day from what you do? How interesting. Does it take you places to keep up on all this? Do you have to travel or are you able to do reporting from far? How do you spend your investigative efforts?
Well, normally it's all over the phone and online. My phone is constantly blowing up, talking to people sending me videos, people saying, hey, here's a rabbit hole you may want to go down.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. But the problem is I have a daytime job, too. And so, I'm a workaholic.
No good. We got to call somebody and get you a grant. We got to get you a $5 million grant. We can't be taking you away from the UFO work. Well, you're a dedicated guy. You know what else you have? You have a magnificent, curious mind. The way you delineate and explain, I could talk to you for hours. We're running short on time, so I'll give you the last word for this visit, but I can't thank you enough for spending time with us.
Well, anytime you want to talk aliens and alien contact, you know how to get a hold of me. And I love speaking about this subject because I just wish we'd see people actually look and instead of saying, that crap ain't real because you don't want to believe it, imagine the possibility that it is. And
without
that's all
doubt.
I ask.
Without a doubt. And you know something? Everything we learned in science about micro everything. The closer you look, the more is there. Dave Scott, fantastic. Love hanging out with you, man. Thank you very much. There you go. Until filling in on Sterling every damn night in tonight, this Mother's Day night for Walter.
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling Shops. Walmart. Sterling Shops.
There's a group of vigilantes. No, I'm not talking about those guys in the French hats and the red jackets, the guardian angels. Not talking about that group of vigilantes. I'm talking about vigilantes who are going after child sex predators. This is a trend throughout the U.S. of A. because many people believe sex offenders are getting away with murder. Walmart, Albany, Oregon. There's a war on people who think that child molesters are bad. Yeah, it's happening there. And so there was a sting by local police to nab these folks. They went to Walmart. The Albany Police Department, by the way, says they take crimes against children very seriously. These types of reports must be investigated thoroughly and very intricately. So that
Ed Till, he's no shill for stalling every damn night.
Ed Till, your fill-in host tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night, in for Walter, having a blast. You know, Dave Scott, huh? Talking about this UFOs. He's got me reliving what I was listening to, I don't know, 45, 50 years ago. But this is the way it went. My friend was sitting in the back seat, his parents' sedan, like a Plymouth Fury. Remember one of those big old, like the police car type? Yeah. And he's in the back seat, mom and two kids in the front. And he is like I used to in the, remember riding in the back seat when you were a kid? And you would get up in that rear windshield. And as long as you weren't blocking me, my dad, or my friend, his mom, if you're not blocking the driver, it was fun to get up in there. So he's looking up in the sky, sees the flying saucer, and right away thinks it's going to be some kind of something else. You know, back in the day would have been a plane, but it keeps lowering, and he's now telling his mom, and she's like, oh, it's nothing. And the thing lowers to where he can see the surface of it. It follows their car on a state road, then through the neighborhood where this is all eyewitness testimony and somebody I, you know, when you're listening to someone, you can tell if they're still scared by it, like when they're retelling it, if they are losing it just a little because they're getting the same fears. This is what's going on. And we were at Treglia's candy store, and at the candy store, there was a, at the entry, there was a stoop that everybody would stand on and people could still go in and out of the candy store, but you were not on the sidewalk. You were elevated, I don't know, about 5 inches off the, where we were standing. So you're looking up at this guy. He's telling this story in the moonlight. You know, it's the summertime, and I couldn't believe, after he was finished, you could never convince that he made up a word of it. It came out so spontaneously, and the details. Well, again, I get it. Dave hears this all the time. He's experienced. He's got you know, a lot of depth of understanding on it. Me, I was terrified. I was convinced that this could happen anytime. And like, we lived in a busy neighborhood. I grew up as a kid on a commercial street where it was all 18 wheelers and buses and big, you know, it was as urban dense a childhood as there could be. And the candy store, we had two of them, we had two hangout candy stores that were diagonal from each other on the big main street. And the thing that brought out the crowd that I'm talking about, these guys were much older than me and my friends, and our eyes were bugging out the whole time. This was a gathering point because the evening newspaper, oh my God, Ed Till, how old are you? Yeah, the evening newspaper used to bring everybody out, certainly in the summertime. You know, you finish having dinner, you just go out for that walk, get some fresh air, whatever. Go to the candy store, and there was always at Treglia's somebody using the stoop as like a platform, right? Like a little, a miniature stage for the storytelling. And I believe it was Billy DiPaolo. Honestly, I can't be sure. Don't put me under oath, Your Honor, please. I can't swear in on this. But I think that was Billy DiPaolo because I'm having a memory of, I really think it was. And his parents talked about it all the time. This was like something factually that happened in our neighborhood in perpetuity going forward. And me, I was like, wow. Every time I got in the back of my dad's car, because we would do all of our shopping in one long day, Saturday or Sunday, where we're just in and out of the car. First, we got to go to Corvettes. Then we got to go to Alexander's. Then we got to go to Strauss store. Then we got to go to True Value. We would just store after store. So the more stuff that my parents got throughout the day, they kept throwing it in the back seat. That was my whole, you know, play area. So I would get on top of the packages. I crawl on top of them so I could squish all the way in to the rear windshield, and I'd be looking. And my dad would go, what the hell are you doing? What are you looking for up there? I go, Dad, don't you know what happened to Billy? And as soon as I would start the story, my parents would just, like, you know, laugh at me a little. They would giggle and turn away. I couldn't even finish telling the story. Oh, yeah. Well, that spaceship, right? Yeah, good. Let us know if you see it, you know. Oh, you know, you should take it. You know, I said, well, if you would have heard Billy DiPaolo, you know, his parents tell that story, they're entitled to that, but we don't know that that happened, is what they said. So, you know, I know. I was watching him right there at Tregelia's Candy Store. All right, how much fun are you guys tonight to be with? I'm having a blast. Ed Till filling in for Walter Sterling on Sterling every damn night.
And Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
Harry, yeah. You and I are both Temple grads, making us very proud the last couple of years, huh?
Yeah, they just took the decimation of the basketball program right off the front page.
Yeah, I got to tell you, they don't win in basketball anymore. They can't. Yeah. They had a nice stretch for football, that's fallen off. There's crime everywhere. Jennifer Griffin is a disgrace, and now I've got a bunch of anti-Semites running around with F the Jews signs.
Right?
Can I have my loan forgiven?
More news. Day and night, around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
Ed Till filling in, having a blast with you. Oh, man. And where is the time gone? Wait a second. Have we been on all this time? Unbelievable. So I will, I only have a few minutes. I have to share something. Can I share? It's okay. We do some sharing. This is right now. We're talking late night. We're talking, May 2025 and 50 years ago, 50. Five decades ago, the first Ed Till broadcast ever, WRLB, Long Branch, New Jersey, 19-year-old, big mouth psycho getting on there talking about things he knows nothing about. I was 19. I started the show. And it was all because they wouldn't let me on the college radio station. As a freshman in college, I wanted to get on the radio station. They said, no. What do you mean, no? I pay the activities fee. Well, freshmen don't get on. Freshmen, you can empty the garbage or, you know. I said, what? I can't do anything? The news, not a thing? No. I said, well, you know what? I don't want to hang around with you guys. I went to a great place near Madison Square Garden in Manhattan, and it was called the NBS Studios. And I went in there, and I recorded a half-hour show that aired at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was me arguing on behalf of Linda Ronstadt. She was complaining that the Eagles were getting more money, and I was in there at 19 all over the, I felt, important issue of the time. So thank you so much. I got to spend the 50th anniversary of my broadcasting career. I don't know. It doesn't sound real. 50 years. But a lot of presidents have come and gone. A lot of current events. A lot of technology. And what I love is it's all about tomorrow. It's all about what hasn't happened yet. Ed Till filling in tonight for Walter Sterling. Sterling every damn night. What a great time with you guys.
Ed Till, he's no shill for Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story, Signs of Seduction, Taurus. Malcolm parked the car in the driveway and went inside the house. though he generally kept the living room and kitchen tidy. He hurried about, cleaning up any clutter and making sure the area appeared presentable. As he straightened the pillows on the sofa, he heard a knock. He opened the door and stepped to the side without saying anything. Claire strode across the threshold and stood in the middle of the room, pivoting in a slow circle to take everything in. "This place looks nice," she said. "I like the painting you hung over the fireplace." "You know me. I was never really one for interior design." She draped her coat over the back of the sofa and placed her purse on one of the cushions. "It's very cozy in here." "Thanks. I'm glad it meets with your approval." He inched closer, hovering behind her shoulder. "Can I get you anything? Do you want any more wine?" She turned around, chin lifted, and eyes focused on him with an intense stare. "I want you." Before he could change his mind, Malcolm seized her by the waist and pulled her into his chest. As she crashed into him, their lips met in a blistering kiss. He plunged his tongue into her mouth, tasting the earthy hints of the Pinot Noir they'd shared at dinner. She felt alive and exciting and familiar and comfortable all at the same time, and he couldn't get enough. Claire balled the lapels of his blazer in her fists, holding him in place. Sharp teeth nipped at his lower lip, and he choked back a groan. She pressed against him, the heat emanating from her body making him twitch. Memories of their past encounters flashed through his mind, stirring up cravings he'd almost forgotten. Some threads of their deep connection had never been severed. Despite their matched enthusiasm, shreds of doubt tugged at him. As they'd reminded each other earlier in the evening, not everything about their relationship was perfect. He broke the kiss, regretting the loss of contact instantly. But he needed her reassurance they weren't about to make a big mistake. "Are you sure about this?" he whispered. She reached up and stroked his cheek. "We both have a good idea of what this is and what this isn't, what we should expect from each other." Her thumb brushed across his lower lip, and he leaned into her palm. "I wouldn't be here if I didn't want to be. But if you don't think this is a good idea, we can call it a night and I can leave. No hard feelings." Malcolm covered her hand with his and swiveled to kiss the underside of her wrist. "You know where the bedroom is." I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my short story, Signs of Seduction, Taurus, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts, you can go to patreon.com/Thea Landon. And don't forget, you can always share your thoughts with me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's find out what happens next. She pursed her lips in a coy smile, then twisted out of his grasp. The sway of her hips as she sauntered down the hallway sent another twinge through him, and he followed her to the door at the end. Once inside the bedroom, he closed the gap between them, grabbing her from behind. Clara let out a squeal of surprise, but didn't resist. He pushed her hair to one side and kissed her exposed neck, dragging his lips up and down from her ear to her shoulder. Her head lolled back against him, her chest rising with her quickened breathing. He couldn't wait to touch her, to feel her again. Without ceasing the movements of his mouth, he skimmed his palms up the front of her body, cupping her chest as his teeth grazed her sensitive skin. He squirmed when his fingers sank into her flesh, rubbing against him. Everything about her, from the scent of her hair to the weight of her chest in his hands, had been seared into his memory long ago. She had awakened something deep inside him, a craving only she could satisfy. He drew back enough to locate the zipper of her dress. Slowly, he pulled it down, its loud scratch resonating in his ears and adding to his anticipation. He pushed each half to the side, and she lowered her arms to let the dress fall to the floor. Her bra was next on his list, his deft fingers unfastening the hooks and adding it to the pile. Claire stepped out of the emerald puddle, kicking her shoes to the side as she did so. Turning around, she planted one hand on her hip, her typical coquettish expression displayed on her face. Despite the dim lighting, he could make out the outline of her curves, her hips encased in white satin. Hunger consumed him. He needed her. She put up a hand to stop him when he moved toward her again. Shirt, jacket, tie. You're wearing far too much at this point, she said, chuckling. Reaching out, she gave the patterned silk a gentle tug before backing away. You work on that. I'll make myself comfortable. Malcolm shrugged off his blazer and loosened his tie. As he hung up some of his clothes and tossed the rest in the hamper, Claire folded back the covers on the bed. She hopped up onto the mattress, swinging her legs up, and reclined in the center. Clad only in his boxers, he paused in the middle of the room and took in the alluring sight. So many times in the past, she had waited for him exactly like this. And the same thrill rippled over him. As he stood and stared, she patted the space next to her. Well? Swallowing, he hooked his thumbs inside his waistband and tugged his boxers off, not caring where they landed. Her gaze rested upon him as he joined her on the bed, and she bit her lower lip. This was such a good idea you had, she purred. I am so glad we ran into each other this week. He steered her face back toward his and stared into her glittering green eyes. Next time, tell me when you're going to be in town. Definitely. Malcolm kissed her again, matching their earlier energy. He pressed his hand to the small of her back to hold her tight, and the heat of her bare skin drove him wild. She threaded her fingers through his hair, her tongue spiraling around his. Before her sudden reappearance in his life, He hadn't realized how much he missed her. And now, he didn't want to let her go. Unfortunately, I think I need to stop here for tonight. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my short story, Signs of Seduction, Taurus, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to hear the unedited, uncensored clips, you can go to patreon.com/TheaLandon. And don't forget, you can always contact me at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night. Let's go from space.
Special for our special day.
Our anniversary.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary, babe.
Thank you, honey.